How does It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia maintain its hilarity and longevity? Plus,
The Mysteries of Silo on Apple TV Plus. An Alabama Tape Projection.
Hello, thanks for tuning in to Taking It Down, the TV and streaming podcast from the Alabama Take, where we prompt conversations for thoughtful, busy TV devotees, all from us, your irreverent outsiders. I'm Blaine Duncan, I'm the editor-in-chief of the Alabama Take. I always could not help dissecting why I like what I like and why I dislike what I dislike when it comes to TV, movies, and more. I have an English degree and a side hustle as an English teacher, so I'll try my best to offer insight that you can use for conversation with others, or even with us, or even just to think about. Luckily, my ideas aren't the only set of viewpoints on this podcast each week, as with me are the other hosts, Adam Morrow's an erudite traveling and studio musician with a penchant for fine literature. Donovan Reinwald is a media specialist with encyclopedic knowledge on film, television, and more. And Natalie Morrow, she's the first person to ask about fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and she's a huge Beyoncé fan. From us, you'll get the obvious, but you'll get the obscure. We are here for the TV and streaming obsessed who are just too busy for anything more than the show or movie itself. We'll give the outside of Hollywood analysis, and like a lot of the Alabama Tape productions, it'll come with zero Southern stereotype. We're in the show proper, and speaking of comedies airing on Hulu and FX, I know it's not a trendy topic anymore, but I wanted to talk about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, how it's been so long running, and it has sustained its hilarity. If you watch the YouTube version, we just got done talking about what we do in the shadows, which can probably sustain some hilarity depending on how long they want to run. It's Always Sunny, though. I think I've talked in conversation with some people and have labeled it as a top five show ever. A lot of times when you get in those conversations, you know, you say, oh, I'm going to put Twin Peaks, I'm going to put Deadwood, I'm going to put Mad Men, I'm going to put The Sopranos, and you kind of forget comedies. But you turn on an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and if you're a fan of it, you're going to laugh. I mean, there's going to be a moment where you will laugh, maybe 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 moments. I'll open up the floor.
Is it the most, because it's been going on for 16 seasons, is it like the most consistent TV show of the modern era or ever?
That.
Because the Simpsons can't keep a
Simpsons
like
are
this.
Back. Per New York Magazine, they had a great write-up about how The Simpsons is very, very funny again. And they laid out their argument quite well. And but It's Always Sunny is consistent. There's only one season that dropped, I think.
Yeah, I wondered as you were talking, in the fandom, which I'm not really familiar with outside of, you know, being a fan, but, you know, like in the Simpsons world, I know what seasons are favored and kind of where the fall off is generally considered to be. There's really not that with Always Sunny, right?
Not really. There is that one, and I can't, don't hold me to this, it's the season where they end up trapped in like this thing that's sinking. It's like three seasons ago, and it just felt like they didn't have it in them. It was still pretty funny, though. They might have even died or went to hell or almost died or something. It was something like that, and like I said, it's been 3 or 4 seasons, so I've kind of forgotten. It was not their greatest moment, but it's like they picked up the pieces from that and decided to just stick with what works.
And what works is they have a secret weapon in Danny DeVito, who is excellent at being a disgusting little troll. Just, like, there was an episode that Blaine suggested I watch from this season. I hadn't started watching the season, so I watched a couple episodes. And one Blaine suggested we watch was, what was that, episode 6?
Yeah, the gang goes rats. To Risky Rats, or it's just called Risky Rats Pizza Palace.
And there's just a... It's not even a joke involved with risk, but it's like Frank is drinking from the water fountain by using like a paper fry.
Yeah, for no reason.
And a kid comes up. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, drinking water. What the hell are you doing? And just everything about it. Like Danny DeVito is perfect for that.
The thing that amazes me with the four of us killed is me. Donovan, you were in on the ground floor. Like you, how do you tune into that show without much warning or word of mouth happening? What happened?
I honestly do not remember.
It was only like 5 episodes, too, the first season.
There was a fair amount of buzz by season 2. Yeah. I feel like word was out by the time it started.
But not season 1. Frank wasn't even on the show.
He had bounced around. Right. He's on the last episode. That's right. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I have no idea.
That's amazing. How it turned out to
it was also a bit like if you want to make like a coaching tree for TV shows, you know, there's a lot that goes back to Arrested Development.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue a lot of comedies kind of came out of that style of how it's shot, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't, when Donovan first turned it on, I don't know that I had like the frame of reference to understand the show. You know, like people would say it's like Seinfeld. And then you watch an episode, if you've never seen Always Sunny before, you think this is nothing like Seinfeld. And as you continue watching, it starts to make more and more sense that it's kind of set the bar for like how absurd and depraved and insane can we make mainstream comedy.
I'm impressed that they tackle, especially early and still, they tackle really taboo topics and they just do not give a shit.
No.
And I'm here for that.
Yeah, I remember, like, I think it's the second or third episode, Mac and maybe Charlie, it might be Dennis, but I think it's Mac and Charlie, because that's usually the pairing, go to, like an anti-abortion rally so that Mac can pick up chicks, and he's like, I've got a list of names of abortion doctors, and Charlie's like, why are some crossed out? He's like, that way they'll think I already did it.
But they're playing both sides, right? And they keep trying to climb that fence.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's why I loved, like, talking about playing both sides, right? Like there was in this Risky Rat episode where they any description of the plot just sounds insane, which I love. But when they go to the mannequin and find that it's been defiled and it doesn't have boobs anymore, and Dennis is like, goddamn libs. And then Charlie's like, oh, but it could be the religious conservatives too. Like, yeah, it could be.
That encapsulates their humor really well. I'm going to quote a tweet from Benny.gay. I've got credit for this person, and it's perfect. It's exactly what we're trying to say, but well said. South Park gave an entire generation a particular flavor of brain rot that centers around the idea that taking anything seriously is by definition cringe. Meanwhile, It's Always Sunny showed everyone how horrible people with South Park mentality are in practice. And
that's it.
I thought, wow.
I love it. Yeah.
South Park did not have a great week on Twitter.
Tell me more.
Just a lot of people saying that its ultimate point is to reinforce the status quo, that anybody that caring about anything is uncool. And they come from a very libertarian kind of place, fairly conservative, even though, you know, they hide it kind of beneath these gross out jokes or, you know, we'll take on any taboo topic. And it kind of makes it seem like maybe they're more progressive than they are.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually in response to the writer and actor strike that's going on, because I don't know enough of the details to lay it out, but there's an episode where they're making fun of Canada and they released it during the last strike. And it's totally anti-union, anti-blah, blah, blah. So
it
has not been a great week for them on progressive social media.
Didn't know that. It's Always Sunny. Some of their better episodes, they don't always have to do this, but like the Risky Rat Pizza and Amusement was actually a lot about how kids' culture changes with times and the effects it has on the adults. I love that. I'm fascinated by that topic. Like, you remember in the 80s when it was like this, and now it's in the 90s, we did this, and now it's like, yeah, I love that shit.
I really loved what they did where, like, everyone in the gang is so, like, they think the stuff that happened in Frank's era was horrible, but then they're trying to describe the things in their era, and they think
but it's
fine and normal. You know, when Dee's like, you know, mostly ethnic humor, and Frank goes, oh, racist stuff. She's like, no, just, like, who belongs, who doesn't belong. It's great. Also, the smash cut to Mac sullenly drinking a juice box in the timeout or the feelings room or whatever.
Yeah, because they went from paddling to timeout to talking about the feelings in timeout. Yes. And Mac says, where's the shame I'm supposed to be feeling? If you don't feel shame, you don't feel bad about yourself.
You don't hate yourself enough to stop.
That's a good
point.
That's how I was raised. That makes sense with where I am today. The scene with Charlie talking about how monsters should sound perfect is just how monsters should sound is really great for idiot fanboys who go online to complain about how ridiculous such things are, like having a black Little Mermaid is.
As I loved it when he's like, he's like trying, like the whole character is offensive and Charlie doesn't get it. And he's like, oh, because, you know, it was a white guy doing the voice. He's like, oh, I get it. Representation is important in monsters.
And they, this season, I don't know if you guys have watched how many episodes you've watched, but they've really managed to drop in some of the old characters that they use sporadically. And that's just always fun.
Yeah. What is it? The bowling alley yes. one? They've got D's team is like a who's who of weirdos. What's her name?
Artemis is on it. Artemis is on it, as well as Snail. And, of course, the McPoyle brothers are running the bowling alley. I mean, see, just the names make you laugh. Yeah. They just play with their mythos. And they do it without being nostalgic, which I find interesting. You know, when the McPoyles are on screen, you're not thinking, God, this is just a nostalgic drop. You're just, you know, they're just trying to milk it for what was happening 12 years ago. Not really. They're there in a totally different capacity other than being creepy and weird.
You know, for me, the other standout episode of the three I've seen was the one where they try and take Frank's gun from him because he shot brilliant. Everyone.
The name of the episodes are so good, too, because everyone got shot.
Every time Frank is just doing something stupid with his gun, it's just like danger. Just, it's great. Sells it so completely.
This is a hard ask, but do any of you have a favorite moment from any episode of the, because I've got mine. I mean, I'm just curious if you guys have one that just really still makes you laugh
of like the whole series or yeah or this season.
Yeah, going oh,
man,
back
there's so many, you know, honestly. There's two that I always think of. One is the no, actually sorry, three, and they're all cat related. One is the Kitten Mittens commercial.
Kitten Mittens is an all-time great television.
Love it.
Dude.
The other one worthy. Is when they like lose a cat in the wall and they keep putting cats in the wall. So you like try and get the cats out.
Yeah.
And then the third would be when Charlie's like says to Dee, like, walk a mile in my shoes. he makes her stay over at his place. And he's like, all right, that's like you gotta chug a beer and huff glue and eat this cat food really fast. It's got a chemical reaction that makes you feel really sick and really awful and you get really tired and you fall right asleep.
That is, to me, the funniest moment on the show.
That was one of mine. Him eating the cat food and then drinking the whiskey or whatever really quickly so he doesn't taste
well, Frank
the cat food.
Comes in and does it, right?
Does it. And just falls without asking.
Rolling and holding his stomach.
Because there's 50 feral cats outside yowling, and you don't want to sleep. You don't even know what that sounds like.
That in this season, they reveal that there's actually a room behind that. It's just an empty room. Charlie's never used, so they're sleeping together for no reason at all.
That reminds me of the when they're fighting, and Frank he keeps yelling at Frank when they're going to bed. Frank, don't go in the crevice. Don't go in the crevice, Frank.
Yes. this show is like word association too, because it just thinking about these makes me think of my other two favorite moments, which is when Frank poops in the bed, but they're trying to figure out who did it, who the mystery turd came from, and then the other one where.
I feel like you just summed up why Natalie hasn't talked for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, poor Natalie.
Where Dennis is eating cereal in his car, and Frank is listening to directions of Charlie on tape, and he rear-ends Dennis, and the gang has a trial. And it comes out that Frank has a certificate specifically saying he doesn't have donkey brains.
Because he felt that's right.
And Charlie's his lawyer.
He goes
like,
to the hospital.
Does Dennis have such a certificate? Okay.
Well, that does take me to my favorite, and it still makes me laugh. I saw it, I guess, on Instagram Reels. Someone posted it for some reason. And it's Frank took over a tourist boat or bus.
Oh, yeah.
Was it a boat? Of a lot of Chinese, Japanese people, you know, and and he's just on the radio, and he doesn't know what to say. He never has had any social experiences that are appropriate, and he says, what do I like to do? I like banging whores. And it's just like, why would you say that? Anyway.
I think all of mine involved Charlie in some way.
Charlie?
Yeah. Charlie work.
Good choices.
When they...
Mine involve Frank, usually.
Frank is a good... I mean, Frank coming out of that sofa that time is...
Naked?
Yeah, a great moment in physical comedy history. I can't remember. They're trying to treat Charlie one day, like make a really great day for Charlie. And Dee is like, I'm going to take you to the spa. And he's never heard the word spa before. So he keeps thinking that she's trying to say spaghetti. And so for the rest of the episode, he insists that they go and get spaghetti. And he's just eating to-go spaghetti through the rest of the show.
Well, he can't read.
Right.
Oh, man. I mean, there's so much to go on. The fact that Mac's dad hates him, but he adores... I mean, pick any plot. Like, Dennis is probably a serial killer.
I mean, talking about Mac and his arc, the genius of the show is that you can start, you know, when he gained all that weight on purpose people intentionally or people not intentionally become better looking the longer they're on TV. I'm going to gain all this weight. We'll make jokes about it. To go from him eating the rum ham with Frank, that kind of starts that. And then the arc ends with his dance thing when he's like shredded again.
And the dance thing was
genuinely emotionally affecting. How does the show pull that off?
I'm glad you said that. Yeah, the dance thing is worth mentioning because he comes out via the dance to his dad and I think to Frank and the others, but they kind of knew it.
I mean, I remember Frank being very affected by it and having, there were real human moments there.
He brings it up this season. Yeah. He talks about, you know, they say Frank, you know, Frank disparages gay people. And he says, no, I'm on board with them since I saw the dance. I understand it now.
Yeah.
And it's a nice moment.
Natalie, do you have anything redeeming to say about Always Sunny? I feel like this was always me rolling your eyes in the corner when I watched it.
I mean, I don't, but it's because I think it's a good show. I think it's funny. I think it's written really well. I think it's clever. I have no problems with the actual... I cannot stand the yelling over each other constantly. Like, that is such a turnoff that even if, like, I want to follow a storyline because I like where it's going, I just can't. Like, it gives me so much anxiety that I have to turn it off and walk away.
She is an anti-stress TV viewer, as we established last week.
We know this well about our Natalie. Hey, Natalie, you're not the only one to point that out, though. Like, I have that's kind of like a running joke about how if a bunch of people are yelling at the same time, somebody will say, this is an Always Sunny episode.
Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, man. I can't get enough of it. I always get so cheerful when it revs up a new season. Let's take a break. On the other side of the break, we'll talk about Silo from Apple TV Plus. We will talk about Secret Invasion's most recent episode. That might be a YouTube special. We'll figure it out. So last week I briefly brought up Silo on Apple TV Plus. I gave it a meek recommendation at the time. I'd only watched one or two episodes. The show, we're going to spoil for 4 of the 10 episodes, the first 4. Be forewarned, but before we do, stick around, see if it's for you. The show is a science fiction drama TV series, obviously, created by Graham Yost, based on the Wool series. I think I'm getting that right. A series of novels. Wool.
I've seen it in Barnes & Noble.
Okay, cool.
I've never read it, but I think you got it right.
There you go. My next question. Is it a recent series of books?
Recent-ish, right? I say that now, and you know, it could have been any time within the last 15 years, I guess.
Okay,
author, I can look it up.
That's recent in book terms.
Fairly
recent.
Howey is the author of the novels, set of them apparently. The setting is a dystopian future, seems to be, where community exists in this giant underground silo, hence the name. I think it's 144 levels. Stars Rebecca Ferguson as Juliet. She's an engineer who becomes entangled in the mysteries of a murder or two, and then like their habitat as well. She kind of is trying to piece together what the hell's going on, big and small. None of us have familiarity with the books. Neither do I. I didn't even know it was a set of books. I just started the show, and then, you know, the end credits tell you based on the books. So we're at least four episodes deep. Here come spoilers, probably. I think we can all recommend it. Adam seemed, in a text message, to be kind of digging it. So I'm going to let Adam and Natalie pick it up from here, just what they're thinking, and then we're going to get spoilers really soon, so just be forewarned.
I like a good world-building show. I'm interested in where it goes from. I guess we don't have to get into spoilers yet, but that's my opening compliment. Why I dug it was I enjoyed the world that it was living in, and it felt like a promising setup. You know, sometimes you feel a little constrained, maybe with something like that, where it could almost be a play, you know, that's so small, but it feels expansive enough as people go up and down the silo. The different levels that, I'm into it. And the whatever the mystery is has been kept vague enough yet intriguing enough. That can be a frustrating thing, you know, because the question is obviously, why are they stuck in here? What's it really like outside? And they're teasing that enough to keep me interested.
It's a world building. It's obviously got some dark themes with murder mystery type of stuff. But it doesn't feel difficult. It still feels like pretty light, easy to watch, at least to me. I mean, it feels, I told Adam when we watched the first couple of episodes, it feels like a very highly produced episode of Doctor Who, which to me is great. It's just, it doesn't feel, yes. I guess, just heavy. You know, it's just an enjoyable, still mystery-ish thing, but it's entertaining. I'm into it.
This is 100% a setup that a doctor could have accidentally stumbled into.
Okay. It's definitely filmed on the Disney World set of Galaxy's Edge, the Star Wars set. And if you've ever visited, it looks a lot like this.
Really?
Yeah, it does. Dingy, very stone, everything built with like this concrete and stone look.
I mean, that may be part of why I'm enjoying it, is I just like the aesthetic. It's
got an aesthetic. I found in around episode 5 that the aesthetic gets a little claustrophobic. You start to wish they could go somewhere. And you know, that's not a spoiler in the least, but I'm curious how they will work around that, or if they just don't, or they continue to let that be a motif, because that would make sense too.
Well, not to get into... Can we get into spoilers here?
Let's do it. Let's get into spoilers episodes 1 through 4.
I think just to make the point about the potential claustrophobic feelings, when Juliet does go, you know, into where the original drill was and is dangling over the water, the promise of figuring all that out is kind of like the release valve on the claustrophobia to me. That there's the potential of something outside, of course, but there's also more mystery in the space itself. And the way that people from different levels talk about the other levels, I mean, there's a sociological component, but it also makes it feel bigger than it probably really is.
Yeah, it's huge. It takes like a day or two to get to from top to bottom.
Right. I'm all in on the drill cavern, the lake, whatever's down there. It felt very similar to some moments in Lodge 49. I don't know if it made you really think of that, Natalie, but that one is almost... I mean, I love that show, and it's on a different level from this one so far, but that one was like a cosmic portal situation, potentially, and this feels a little bit more grounded than that.
When she gets to that cavern, it is breathtaking in its immensity.
Yes.
And you're right. It does contrast their habitats and their apartments that they have to live in.
Donovan, it reminds me a bit of a book that you recommended to me, Piranesi.
Yeah.
How so?
Well, the setup there is someone is in a mysterious place that just seems vast. But it's a different setup, but it feels a bit... How would you describe that, Donovan? It's not subterranean, but it's...
It's vast and cavernous and improbable, but also the guy chronicling it just records everything so matter-of-factly that it has, there's almost that, like, good dissonance.
Right.
Of like, how could this be and what isn't?
Almost feels like a dreamscape. Yeah. Like, in that one, there are tides in the area that they're in because there's ocean waves and all this kind of stuff. So it's not on that same level, but the setup of people being somewhere and not really understanding why, but not questioning it that often, feels similar.
That is definitely what's happening here. There's this pervasive idea throughout all of the episodes that if you hide information and you're the one that gets to hide it, you're the one in power. That's a pretty common theme in literature and shows. I like what they're doing with it. That's really cool. It's done well. It's comfortably complex. I think that's what Natalie was getting at. There's a complexity to it that makes you want to watch the next episode, but you're not like throwing your hands in the air and saying, fuck this, I can't understand what they're doing.
There's been a few, just to blatantly spoil, the end of episode 4, when she gets the file on her deceased boyfriend, and they treat it like a reveal, and we didn't totally understand why that was treated as a reveal. Like, has she learned new information there? There are a few things about the way that the bureaucracy inside the silo works that make you think of checks and balances, or maybe more like a late-stage Soviet people fighting each other kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. That's a good comparison.
I don't know that I've fully tracked all of that.
Well, that was interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. That episode ended, and I thought to myself, I guess kind of like you did, like, what an odd place to end an episode, because it didn't feel special.
This isn't quite what you're saying. That did we miss something? This seems like it's been being treated as something really important, but we don't know what it is. I think there's also been, like, in the first episode, when it's revealed that she clearly, when she had her birth control removed, and then clearly she didn't have her birth control removed, that was so skated over. I thought that was very strange. Like, just a giant plot hole that everybody was like, okay, whatever. I don't know if it doesn't seem like they're coming back to that. Maybe they will, but it just seemed like a very heavy thing for them to just treat so casually. I was confused about that choice, just to not even react to that.
Well, I mean, that's part of the recurring statement, listen to your wife, right?
But it wasn't just her husband that saw it. I mean, I don't know. It was weird. I thought that was a weird choice.
Okay, that answers my question. I was going to say, wasn't it just the sheriff, her husband, who saw it?
I mean, she did go into the cafeteria, right? The Rashida Jones character. But I don't know. If somebody walked in covered in blood who was... And it seems like everybody knows everybody's business and would have known that they have just failed their third and final attempt at having a kid. Mm-hmm. I could see the community thinking, this is a person in emotional distress, maybe not in sound mind or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And she asked to go outside, which is also proof that she might.
But even if it was just her husband, that's beyond listen to your wife. That's, she knew it was going to be an issue, so she presented physical proof. How does he not just ask somebody, like, hey, what's this about?
But that,
I think there's a fear of asking too much.
Yeah.
I think he's scared of judicial.
I think that even, you know, a lot of them see when the power goes out briefly, the screen changes. And nobody really raises a stink, but they all look, and they almost look like they wish they hadn't seen it.
That's a question that they seem to have tucked away for now, where I am. I know I'm one episode ahead, but it's not that big of a jump. That they want to tuck away the whole what's going on outside, I think for the betterment of the show, because what they're investigating now is pretty interesting. We'll go ahead and ask the question, the million-dollar question of the show. What do you guys think? Is it okay outside? Is the screen they're looking at in the astronaut kind of suit, does it project a nicer view so that they will clean in hopes that everybody will see how nice it is? I mean, are they pumping them with gas and kills them? What's your theory on what happens when they go outside? You got plenty of options, you know.
Feels too early to have a theory. We know so little.
Yeah, I just seen so many message boards after episode 1 and 2 just be like, oh, well, the screen that they see in the mask is fake, or it's somehow controlled and they're not seeing reality.
Once they're out there.
Mm-hmm. It's too picture perfect, I will say that. I mean, it is a bright blue sky. It is really, really green.
Well, and it's the, I don't know if when she was watching the screen, when she went down to do her IT work and they were looking at the hard drive, you could see the reflection of the flying V of the birds flying by. And then that's exactly what they saw when they go out. So it's like, yeah, maybe it is. Maybe that is a projection for them and not for real people. Real people.
Like a last mercy because they know they're going to die. So they see something beautiful.
Yeah, here's some euphoria. Feel better about your situation.
The message board theory is they put the very beautiful nature on that screen in their helmet so that they will want to clean.
Right.
So they'll be like, look, it's actually nice out here. We're okay. Come out. They'll clean because they can't hear them. There is a possibility that it's pretty desolate and barren out there, but it's also okay to live after 144 years.
Right.
If you let people go, you lose control over who's in charge.
Right. It seems like a lot of people, I mean, regardless of what the truth is, there are people who want power and there are a larger number of people who don't want to exist through a shakeup because shakeups are scary.
It's true.
Is the girl's accent distracting to anybody else?
She drops that accent here and there and then she brings it up again. She's is she Irish?
Scandinavian, yeah.
Swedish, right?
Wow. I'd never heard of this actress.
I knew, yeah, she's pretty good.
Big role for her, though.
The classic streaming era bait and switch of, oh, Rashida Jones is in this program. No, she's not.
or Oscar winner David Oyelowo.
Or Tim Robbins is in it, and he doesn't show up until, what, episode 3? Something like that.
In as big a role as, yeah. I like him. And I like him in this role. And you'll see... You guys will see a little bit more why in episode 5. Let's map it out just a little. We kind of already have, and then that'll give us a moment to wind down the conversation here. So the idea here is they're living in a silo. It's 144 stories. At the very bottom's engineering. Mysteriously below that, and only a few people know, is the huge drill. We're talking Empire State Building-sized drill, maybe. That created the place. No one hardly knows about it. Maybe two people. You've got David Oyelowo as the sheriff. His wife's an IT lady. She goes to help George. And George has a disc that might reveal more than anyone would want to know. And she finds it out. She decides suddenly that we're being lied to. My birth control's still in me. She cuts it out. She volunteers to go outside because she thinks she can live. She dies, seemingly. And David Oyelowo, after a little while, decides, I'm going to do the same thing as sheriff. I'm going to volunteer to go out because I want to be with my wife. He's since hooked up with the engineer, Juliet. And she's shown him the cavern, shown him some relics from way back when. That's what I've got mapped out so far. What am I missing? Once he's gone, he asked that Juliet become sheriff in his place. He left a note. And so she's going to take up the mantle of sheriff. Sheriff reports to the mayor. Mayor seems to report to judicial.
But also have some autonomy.
Also has some autonomy to do things like put on parades, make some bigger decisions than that.
Pick the sheriff. Mayor dies.
Okay, that's why was my question. Yeah. You've seen the mayor die. She had been mayor for 40-something years. Everybody loves her. Beloved mayor. The guy, I forget his name. Is his name? I forget the actor's name, but the deputy?
Mm-hmm.
He is so good. You'll see him in occasional things, usually westerns. Or
about Will Patton?
Will Patton.
Yeah.
Yeah, you knew him. Where do you recognize him from?
Well, he actually does a lot of audiobooks. He's very good at it.
No way. That makes perfect sense.
And he was, this confuses me a lot, as someone in the generation that was shown Remember the Titans. At every opportunity. He
that's
was
right.
Coach Yost, and so every time it says Graham Yost on the screen, as you know, in the credits or whatever, I get confused. Because that Will Patton's not Graham Yost, you know, but he is Cody.
Donovan, you're going to love this. This is for Donovan. You know how I remember Will Patton the most?
Please tell me.
He was the villain in the famous Kevin Costner picture, The Postman. I always bring up The Postman on this show. No one's seen The fucking Postman but me.
I've been warned away from it. He was the villain in Waterworld, too. That was pretty bad, yeah. Also. Yeah. What is wrong with him?
Are we about bad to, choices? Don't disparage Waterworld, Donovan.
Don't disparage Kevin Costner to me, friend. No, Will Patton is also the villainous type character in Outer Range, which came out last year. Josh Brolin show on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
He's really good in it, too. Will Patton's just good, man.
If you ever have an itch to listen to Dennis Johnson's Train Dreams, Will Patton will be the voice that guides you through it.
No.
It's wonderful.
I didn't know you were an audiobook guy.
I'm usually not. A specific kind of book, nonfiction, is fair game, and a specific kind of fiction. And I had read Train Dreams a couple of times, and some buddies were reading it, and it was a short listen. I'll like listen while I run, do that sort of thing.
About 5 minutes.
It really is less than, it's probably like a couple of hours, something like that.
Oh. Audiobooks seem to be more, if you like the narrator, go find what they read, rather than if you like the book.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like,
it's a different genre.
Andy Serkis doing Lord of the Rings is very good.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe that's how I should digest
Maybe Lord so. Of the Rings.
I just can't keep my brain on track of an audio.
You got to be doing something pretty. You got to be running or driving or people who just listen to audiobooks all the time. I can't really do that. I have to be doing something that could be described as monotonous, you know.
Monotonous or brainless.
Yeah, I could only do it when I was driving or exercising, and even then I would still not, you know, just lose focus.
Yes, same here. With a book, you can go back and look at the page you kind of forgot or two. Yeah.
That's the thing. If it's of a certain, it has to be of a certain narrative quality for me to go with an audiobook. I would never have consumed Train Dreams for the first time via audiobook.
Maybe that's what I should do. You can consume something I've already read as a reread because I don't reread books. That's interesting.
You know, I did Norwood as an audiobook when I had to drive more. It was about 6 hours. Narrator was good, and I knew all the beats, so it made me laugh. That was pretty.
Do you know
pleasant.
Who narrated it?
No idea. Oh, I mean, I guess I could look it up, but yeah.
Norwood by Raz.
Perfect.
The Raz of the South.
We're going to come to the end of our audio. If you're a podcast listener and you listen to us in some sort of podcast app, thanks. This is technically the end of our show. But if you prefer more, if you like us, if you like hanging out with us, we like hanging out with you. We're going to put our Secret Invasion talk on YouTube. And it'll just be at the end of this. Thanks, everyone.